Okay, so three things don't ask me about. I don't want to take questions. Okay. I don't want to take questions.
Wow, okay.
It's a very strong start to this podcast, isn't it? I am not taking questions on what day it is, what date it is, or what time it is. I'm just not taking questions on those three things.
Right, yeah.
Is that fair enough?
Which country are you in?
I'm in Australia. Can I say I was let in? With everything that's gone on, despite the fact I'd gone through my paperwork and I've got three vaccination papers to show them, still a little bit nervous. A couple of friends had gone through and they'd been stopped and said, "Do you have any seeds in your bag?" I thought, oh, but that put me off packing my usual sort of truckload of cereal bars. I thought, oh, we don't want to get turned away with cereal bars. And there was lots of announcements going through the airport. But no, I got waved through. They didn't look at anything. And off I went. And I spent the journey. I watched season 3 of Succession. And I watched season 5 of Billions. So there's a lot of testosterone rolling around in all lots
success. You just smell the success.
Just lots of big deals and all this kind of stuff. But it was actually, I think it's the first time in forever I've just sort of sat back and kind of watched a box set or a series or a season. Plane was quite busy, really nice listening to people who were maybe returning home for the first time in a couple of years. So that was quite sweet. Yeah. Lots of Australians saying, good. I've been away for so long. Or people, there was a lovely Scottish couple next to me. It's amazing, isn't it? When you see anyone Scottish, you just want to speak to them about Andy Murray. It's just this, it's like there are other things.
They want to talk about him as well. I've never met a Scot who doesn't want to talk about Andy Murray.
There are other things in Scotland. It almost feels like the first question is not, who are you visiting? Andy Murray. But there's a lovely couple who are going to visit relatives who they haven't seen in a long time. I then did ask about Andy Murray afterwards. I did it in the right order. So, I went direct to Darwin and then across or down or up or wherever I went. But I'm here. I'm in Melbourne. I landed. It's one of those. I landed. And the last time this happened was Indian Wells when I switched on my phone as I landed in America. And Maria Sharapova was having her, remember her press conference in that hotel with a really dodgy carpet? And she was standing there saying, I did this thing, the drugs. And so it was similar, no hotel or dodgy carpet, but I switched on my phone and I was having friends from back home saying, so he's out again. I think your message was, what was your message? Your message was, what a mess or something.
I know, I think it was something like you've arrived to chaos or something like that.
I was like, what's happening? And then all these messages and then all, I was like, I was on social media to find out what was going on.
All these days of waiting, and it happened when you were on the plane. Which, rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's happened, but it still hasn't happened because we're still waiting for the, I mean, it's ridiculous. The first thing I'll say, I said it last week, there's no winners. This just ends badly for everybody. The longer I was a little bit more sympathy for Djokovic, everything he went through. Now I'm kind of like, just go. If you hadn't come in the first place, or if you'd been vaccinated, and then the government saying,
Well, you were saying before all of this, not long ago, you were saying, why is Djokovic dragging it out? And I was thinking, oh, you're being a bit harsh. Well, this is dragged out to the max. Maybe you knew what was coming because, it isn't all his responsibility that we're still in this situation, but it's largely his responsibility because he wanted to come in unvaccinated on an exemption, which he didn't need to do. So, so now I'm fully on board. Why is this being dragged out so long? How is it still not resolved?
Isn't
the tournament's on Monday.
But do you remember when the draw took place and it was delayed for an hour? So the draw was delayed for an hour and everyone was like, right, it's because there's going to be news. And there was, I think Scott Morrison did hold a press conference and I was like, right, did not mention Djokovic in it. And everyone's like, oh, okay, so he's in the draw and then he's in the draw and everyone figuring out what happens if he's not in the draw and he's still practicing. And wasn't there a drone that went in to try and get him practicing and then it was closed practicing and open
closed
practicing?
Doors,
I mean, I'm so over it. It's absolutely ridiculous. And there is nothing, for me, there's nothing to be gained for Djokovic. I do know it's Friday. And the appeal, I believe, is due to be heard tomorrow morning. And then would he be put back in the immigration hotel, I think, for Saturday night decision Sunday? Is that the rough timetable?
Something like that. I mean, they're getting a bit of a reprieve in the fact that it seems like the judges is working with the timetable of the Australian Open on starting on Monday, and he's scheduled to be on Monday because it's top halves on Monday. That is Novak Djokovic. So it is, oh my God. Again, if it gets overturned and he gets put in the tournament, I mean, he would have not been able to practice this weekend. I mean, talk about horrendous preparation. Is it going to be overturned? I mean, I can't see it. You sort of feel like they wouldn't cancel it if they had a leg to stand on. Why would they put themselves through that?
I mean, I get the first time he appealed because he wasn't treated that great. He was treated pretty shoddily those 8 hours at the airport, and there was lots of... I think it could have been handled better. So I understand him wanting to appeal to say, well, actually, I came in on the good faith, I had the right documents. But since then, so much has come out that maybe he popped over to Spain and back and the box wasn't ticked. Have you been anywhere else in the last 14 days? And then he was COVID positive, was it the 16th? Then he was out and about. Then he did an interview with a L'Equipe journalist, kept his mask on, then took his mask off. All these things that have since come out, I think surely you just say, you know what? Enough is enough. He hasn't even faced the press yet. Can you imagine if this appeal, he wins this next appeal, and then he's got the press conferences to go through? I mean, just with everything that's come out since, enough is enough. Just go home. You're going to have to figure something out for the rest of the year. There'll have to be a statement of some kind, but I just think enough is enough now.
Yeah, but I think he's competitive. He wants to win. He wants to prove himself right. He wants his principles.
But I get the first appeal. What grounds is this appeal on? I don't understand. What grounds now is this appeal on? Because he's admitted that he was wandering around when he shouldn't have been, and he went to a different country when he shouldn't have been, and all this kind of mess. So it's just so messy now. It's just, I don't know. I get the first appeal. Maybe you just naturally appeal. That I've never been in a situation when I've had to appeal something, but maybe your natural instinct is to, I'm going to appeal, and that's what you do.
Yeah, sure. If there's an opportunity to do it, then why not give it a go and see? I mean, Renata Vorokova is talking about taking action because she wants compensation for her experiences and the fact that she hasn't been given the right to compete. One imagines that if Djokovic is sent home and is unable to play, it will not be the end of it. I think something will happen, whether he refuses to ever play in Australia again because he's upset at how it's handled, whether he tries to get compensation, or whatever route he would go down, you sort of imagine he would explore something like that. But then does that become sort of bitter, and is that internal fighting within the sport if he's sort of, laying the blame with Tennis Australia? I mean, he can't really do anything against the government, one imagines. I don't think that he can really sue the government for deporting him. They can do what they want. He's not one of their citizens, and they've kicked him out of the country. They can do that at any time, really, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not going to be the end of it either way. I think this is going to just go and go and go. But, I mean, we'll have the tournament, and I do think that during the tournament we'll be able to focus on it if Djokovic isn't in the event. But if Djokovic is in the event, and he is currently in the draw, due to play on Monday, then it will just continue as long as he's in.
Well, the other thing, if it will continue, because with the health minister invoking the rule to use his power to revoke the visa, this means he should be out for another 3 years now. This isn't just a year off home now.
It's an automatic thing. I imagine that would probably get overturned.
But no, you can only appeal that one if you believe that you coming to Australia will benefit Australia somehow. So it's in the interest of Australia that you are allowed in. They're the only grounds that he could appeal the 3 year ban on.
But I think he could argue that. I think that would be an easy argument for 2023. Say the pandemic is done, vaccinations aren't required anymore, whatever. I think that he could definitely argue that. He's won the tournament 9 times. He is a huge, world number one. He'll probably still be world number one by that point. I'm just making massive assumption there, but I don't think that is too far-fetched. So, yeah, I mean, I imagine that he'd be able to fight that. I'm not too stressed about that. More concerned for Vorokova that she's been banned for 3 years. That would be rubbish if that's the case.
I think it's... It's just, it's just a mess all in the whole situation. And I think it's difficult on the players as well, because they're obviously going to be asked about it. But what can they really say? I think the latest thing was Murray saying, look, I don't want to sort of trample on the guy while he's down. But they all come back to the same thing. You probably should have just got vaccinated. You know, they've all kind of said it. You know, Nadal's come out and said, well,
I did it. Yeah, pass.
Yeah, they've kind of come out and said, well, we did it almost to look after others as much as ourselves. And if he'd done
that... Well, Tsitsipas was saying, I believe, that by Djokovic getting an exemption, he was saying it sort of makes everyone else look like fools because we all had to get the vaccination to come and play.
Saw that.
So he was, you know, he was pretty fair about it. He wasn't sort of having a go at Djokovic, but he was a bit like, well, okay, you know, we were all told we had to have it to come and play. So yeah, I think in general players, I think it's probably a similar feeling to us, right? In that everyone can see it for what it is in the situation and the part that Djokovic has played and the situation that he's ultimately put himself in. And I think everybody holds him responsible for that. But I think everyone can agree that this has not been handled by anyone remotely well at all.
No winners. No one comes out of this looking good. You can criticise every single party that's been involved in this in this absolute mess. There's no one that comes out thinking, well, you did well. No, you're
all
to blame.
Well, Djokovic could still win 21. That could be, in 2 weeks' time, be the situation.
But then, do we put... I've got to think about this, because no one ever got jet lag, but I don't say it right when I haven't got jet lag. The... Asterisk.
Yeah. The asterisk.
Okay. I've got jet lag. I haven't slept. But surely it'll have one of those next to it. Big one of those
no.
next to it. Big one
no,
of those next to it.
It'll have one of those next to it as in, like, it's even more impressive. I'm sorry, but if Djokovic played the Australian Open and won it, it would be even more impressive than a regular year to come through this shambolic situation that he put himself in. He didn't have to, but he has done it, regardless of whether it was his fault or not. It's been a horrendous ordeal for him to be faced with unexpectedly. And if he were to then come and play and win, an extra notch on the greatness belt, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, but please tell me that this scenario, I think my speech is going to get worse the longer we go on the podcast, but please tell me that this scenario will not give him a leg up in your mind for the greatest of all time debate, because this does not add to
his
greatness.
If he wins the tournament.
No,
the tournament.
No. No, no.
Oh no!
It shows.
She's pointing at me. She's never been so upset.
It shows he's kind of subhuman. The fact that he can block everything out, but it does not add to his greatness because it's a mess. It's an absolute shambles.
The situation doesn't add to his greatness, but if he were to win, Well, because A, he wins 21, so he becomes the greatest when it comes to Grand Slams.
Yes, he would be the male.
Side.
Yeah, be the male leader, so he would be.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to give him that. If he were to win a slam after this, that's just outrageous. Outrageous. I'd be looking at the rest of the field being like, what's going on?
But I mean,
come on.
This is I've had friends who've been asking me about Djokovic's brothers, because they've all been holding press conferences, so they've been reading articles in the paper saying, oh, who's Geordie, tell me about him. I'm like, again, not a conversation I thought I'd be having with you about Djokovic's brothers, because the family are front and center defending their boy, which is natural. And I just can't believe it's still going on. I can't believe that up until the eve of this tournament, of the Grand Slam, the happy slam, that it's just a mess, isn't it? It's just an absolute mess. But do you think, as a former player, do you think this is in any way damaging for your sport? Do you think the publicity has been great for your sport? Because we haven't been talking about the tennis stories that we would normally have been talking about. And there have been some fantastic ones over the first couple of weeks. Or do you think, well, you know what? Yes, there's been some great stories for us who like tennis, but they're not the kind of stories that would have garnered the attention that tennis has been getting through Djokovic?
Well, look, I mean, all press is good press, I suppose. The attention and focus on you know, our best player in the world, is, you know, I think is always sort of a positive. I think I don't really see how it's damaging. Look, it's not pleasant, but I don't really see how it's damaging because, you know, it's the government involved, and it's not like it's, you know, whilst Tennis Australia have clearly played their part, it's not like it's entirely their fault and a stuff up and a whatever, you know. Yeah, I think it damages Djokovic's reputation in a number of places in the world. I think it will probably strengthen his fan base in some, you know, in some corners of the world as well, particularly in Belgrade. So yeah, I think overall it's probably damaging for Djokovic. I think within the world of tennis, it's damaging for Tennis Australia, for the event, for Djokovic as well. But I think in terms of everybody, you know, who's not really in that world of tennis, the fact that this has transcended, this is the front page news. I'm not sitting here feeling like, oh, this is showing tennis in a terrible light. I don't think that, because it's sort of outside of the control of tennis, you know. So I mean, of course, there are lots of things that I wish had been done better, but I don't think there's going to be any sort of lasting damage, which is a good thing, I suppose. But I don't. It's not doing anything for us either. I don't think there's any positive to it.
As we speak, it's now Saturday morning, isn't it? Not Friday night where I am. Do you think he will play in the Australian Open or not, as things stand at this second? What's your feeling?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm no lawyer. I've got no idea whether he has a leg to stand on or not. The interesting thing is that the original one, I mean, there's no point in really talking about this, because I think by the time this comes out, things will probably have been decided. But the original appeal was won on, I mean, some would call it a technicality, but it was done because of the procedure of detaining him. No decision was made as to whether he was there on a valid exemption or not. This one seems like the decision, they're appealing the fact that the minister has decided that this is not a valid exemption, that he shouldn't be here, that, you know, he might, you know, it's not a good thing to have him in the country ultimately. So there's sort of a different situation. The judge hasn't looked at that part, like, hasn't actually decided whether or not he should or shouldn't be in the country. It was just that, well, you handled things badly, so we're overturning it. Like, it just wasn't done properly. And it's the same judge. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, you just sort of have to imagine that for them to cancel it a second time, they must have been really, really, really sure that it wasn't going to get overturned again, because that would, I mean, can you imagine? Because if it gets overturned again, I think it's still within his power to cancel it for a different reason. And then you're getting into the Australian Open. So then he would be playing the Australian Open, and he could, like, cancel it again. I think there's one more route that he could look at.
Wow.
I don't know. As I say, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. But so I've been told. But yeah, I can't imagine that would happen. But
can I just say, before I forget, although I've already forgotten, what that Hoover thing, the make of the Hoover thing, you know, the round thing.
The Roomba.
The Hoover, the Hoover's on it. Yes. I'm still getting messages about it, and I've started to see it places. Not as
it's
in imaginary
everywhere.
Seeing it, as in, but I've never seen it before, and suddenly someone's either brought it up in conversation, I'm like, that is very weird, or a few more messages on social media, or I've seen one on some advert. I mean, honestly, this thing is like everywhere now, and I had never heard or seen of them before. So, and I still can't remember the name. Now, one thing that Djokovic's story's done, especially in terms of in the UK, and I'm not talking about the British press, because they are giving her time, they are understanding, but the kind of wider people that maybe came into Emma Raducanu at the US Open and then maybe didn't follow tennis all the time and now are expecting her to win everything. And we knew she would need time. She's on the tour for the very first time. She won a Grand Slam title before she won a WTA Tour match, and she lost heavily to Rybakina. Love and One, was it, in Sydney. And it was interesting just looking on social media. Again, the British tennis press, they've all been very like, come on, we've got to give her time. What is going on here? But some of the messages, people saying, well, she's a one-hit wonder. We thought she was going to be the real deal. I mean, you've just got to... And someone said, well, of course she's not playing well because all she's been doing is signing deals and doing photo shoots. I mean, it's so one thing the Djokovic thing has done to the wider tennis audience, especially in the UK, is almost just let her get on with things a little bit in the build up to this tournament.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? The attitude of like, you know, well, thought she was going to be the real deal and what as in sort of that she might win a slam one day. I think she might have already ticked that box. Like, what does real deal mean to you? No, you know what? I can sympathise and I can understand that people don't understand that she can go from being achieving what she achieved and those results to losing love and won to Rybakina, that a lot of people who are sort of casual watchers of tennis, who maybe watched Emma's US Open final, watched Wimbledon, whatever, you know, they wouldn't know her. So I can understand that people would sort of question that. You know, like sports that I don't know much about, for example, in football, like I don't understand, well, I suppose I do a bit maybe, but, you know, as in, so Leicester win the Premier League and it was such a remarkable run and it's just sort of accepted that, yeah, it's never going to happen again. But I'm like, but they did it. Why can't they do it again? And it's just sort of like, it's never going to happen again.
But
do you know what I mean?
No, but they won't.
I know that.
But they won't.
I know that.
They won't.
But, you know, so it's sort of a similar thing, as in like, well, why aren't they winning the games that they were winning before? Like, whatever. I don't know. It's a different situation. But that's the answer is it's a different situation, isn't it? So it's a different time and it's about things coming together. It's about luck. It's about a feeling. It's about energy. It's about everything working, I suppose. I can understand, because if I didn't know anything about it, I sort of would be looking at like, okay, she's not only she's not winning matches, if you were watching, you know, she's not playing how she played at the US Open, so what is going on? So I do cut people some slack, but people are particularly rude about it. Like, I can understand, as I say, people asking questions. Like, I might say to you, why aren't Leicester winning the Premier League this year? Or like ask questions, or people can ask, why isn't Emma, you know, achieving? Why isn't she competing, dominating, beating other top 20 players? So I can understand people asking the question, but yeah, people being rude and sort of really derogatory about it, as if she's now just rubbish. And as you say, like, oh, I thought she was going to be the real deal. Like, how many slams do you need to win to be the real deal? Because one, for me, ticks that box thoroughly.
Well, she's playing someone else who's won one in Sloane Stephens. I mean, Sloane Stephens, who has recently got married, so congratulations to her. And that's the reason I can't predict that match or any other Sloane Stephens matches, because I don't know which Sloane Stephens is going to play. Is it going to be the one that is going to blow you off? Is going to be so incredible in how she plays and moves? Or is it going to be the one where you're thinking, oh, okay, wow, not today. I can't, where she's involved, I can't predict.
She might be the most unpredictable player. I mean, her ceiling is ridiculous and her floor is pretty low as well. it's extraordinary. And for Sloane, the fact that she's just got married, you know, I think I've heard a lot of people saying like, ah, well, she's not going to be as sort of locked in, because we've had periods of time where she hasn't looked locked in to her matches and sort of competitive and really switched on. And you're sort of looking at it like, what are you doing in training? And then other times where you just sort of go, wow. Wow, wow, wow. You know, I still go back to the final of Toronto 2017 or 2018 against Halep, one of my favourite matches I've ever seen in my life. Just incredible. It was Sloane Stephens against Halep. But then maybe getting married, she could just be really relaxed. She's sort of feeling that honeymoon vibe. Just have a swing. We know the ability that she has, on the ball. And yeah, it could be interesting. I kind of feel like the most likely situations are either a comfortable Raducanu victory or a comfortable Stephens victory. I feel like that tight tussle, I just don't really see it, because they're both, you know, when they lose, as in like when Emma's been winning, she's been winning very comfortably. And when she's been losing, she's been sort of losing quite comfortably. And Sloane is a bit like that as well. So if we get to four in the third, I'll be like, what is going, this is not on brand for either player. This is ridiculous. So, I think lots of people are saying it's a tough draw for Emma. Of course, there are some better draws in there. But I think on the whole, would you rather be playing a Stephens than, say, a really consistent tour player that is sort of winning matches week in, week out. Yeah, because I think you've got that chance. But there's like a 20% chance that Stevens just absolutely obliterates her.
But then, yeah, I'm not sure I'd like, if I was a player, I'm not sure I'd like to play those unpredictable ones because you feel it's on their racket. You feel they can take it to a level and they can just be absolutely sensational. I don't know, the unpredictable players, I think, I don't know, you've been out there and played players. I would feel that the unpredictable ones are the particularly tricky ones to face.
Yeah, it adds a layer of nerves, doesn't it? Just that sort of, you're just not sure what's going to happen. And already, I mean, we've talked about this on the pod before, but when your level is unpredictable as well, you know, for Raducanu, we're not really sure what we're going to get from her at the Australian Open. You know, it's not been full of confidence recently. She hasn't played very much. She's had COVID. There's always a chance that, you know, big stage, she clearly loves a big stage. I mean, my word, big stage, you know, big match playing against the Sloane Stephens with a big reputation. She might free herself of the expectation and come out firing and really get something going for the tournament. You just don't know. But I think that, you know, when Emma's walking on the court, she's probably feeling a bit nervous because she's not sure what's going to come out at the moment in terms of her level of tennis. And then you're not sure what your opponent's going to do. So, as I say, I mean, you could see sort of like a walloping one side or walloping the other side. I mean, I say that I'd be surprised if it was deep in the third, but I sort of wouldn't because, you know, you just feel like anything can happen.
Well, anything, I think, once again, could happen in the women's draw. Someone on social media was asking for dark horses the other day, and someone said Simona Halep. I'm like, hang on. Simona Halep cannot...
How many slams do you have to win to be a dark horse?
Because I think with Simona Halep, she's kind of hit 30, got married. Everyone's like, well, she's finished. She's going to... Everyone's been saying, are you going to retire? She's like, why am I going to retire? I've just got married. I've just... You know, it's been like, right, okay, bang, you're done. And she seems to have come back with this real drive and determination. So, look, I try and sort of go for one with the dark horses, but I'm not having Halep as a dark horse.
No.
Not having that. But this little top chunk of the draw, I've tried to get up. It's hard anyway, the women's draw, because there's a number of names you could put in the ring. But then you look, there's this little chunk with Osaka. Hang on, we've got Osaka in there, Yastremska, who's back playing, Anisimova, who won a title recently in there. You've got Bencic. And you've got Georgie, and then you've got a little higher, you've got Barty. I mean, that top chunk of the draw is absolutely stacked. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, potential Osaka-Barty fourth round, that would be there in each other's section. Osaka was playing well until she had to withdraw from her tournament, but, you know, she does like withdrawing the week before a slam and then winning that slam.
Do you think, could that be, not to say she doesn't have an injury, but let's just say she didn't have an injury... or the injury wasn't that bad and she probably could have played. Do you think for her, it's she doesn't want to have a final before a Grand Slam? So if she had got into the final and then lost, do you think that would have... Because it's happened a few times now. Do you think it's to take herself out of that sort of pressure of being in a final way, or that wouldn't apply to her? I'm just wondering why this pattern has developed now. I think it's three times, isn't it? Three or four times when she hasn't...
It's developed because... For me, it's developed because it works, because she's won the tournament afterwards. It works.
Yeah,
and
it could be,
for whatever reason, I think it could be a number of reasons. It could be that she has a bit of a niggle and she's like, I'm sorry, but the Grand Slam's more important than this. Because do you know what? Tennis players are always playing with niggles and there are times to push through and there are times to not. And maybe she's just like, week before a slam, I do not push through anything. Anything, the remotest twinge, I'm not having it. Yeah. It could be that she... plays the matches, is happy with her level and says, that's enough, I'm ready. She feels ready, so she doesn't want to play anymore and tire herself out. I do think there is something in winning a tournament the week before a slam. I think it's incredibly difficult to play. I mean, and look, normally the tournaments we're talking about with Osaka are sort of the 2 weeks before a slam, so there would be the week off in between. So, for example, Cincinnati before the US Open. Although one of those withdrawals in the final 2020 was actually a couple of days before the US Open started. So that was very, very close. But I find myself saying with other players, if they don't win this tournament, I think they'll win the Grand Slam, if you know what I mean. So, for example, you know, working on Sydney this week, Paola Badosa has been playing phenomenally well. She is through to the final, which she'll be playing tomorrow evening. But I sort of, in my head,
my player
I'm like,
of the year in the final.
Krejcikova, absolutely. But in my head,
from last
I'm sort
year, not this year.
Yeah, I feel like you've got more. I don't know. You've got more going for you. So Kontave lost in the semi-finals. I feel like it's just a more ideal situation, I think, to be playing very well, going into the slam, have that little bit of a breather. It's more difficult coming off the title. I think it's more expectations. You have to change surface, change venue very quickly. There's all those different things that go with it. You have to start again. Every tournament you go to, you have to start again with different conditions. And I think it's harder when you've come off the back of a victory. So I do find myself thinking, you know, Muguruza playing well, for example, at Eastbourne, making the semis and being like, oh, yeah, I think she's going to be a real threat at Wimbledon unless she wins the title here. I know it sounds sort of counterintuitive, but I just feel like it's just such a tough thing to do, to go on these runs back-to-back tournaments. It's insane. It's hard enough to win the slam. So it just feels like, I mean, look, there's no right or wrong, but it's definitely, I don't know. Like, our Grand Slam champions on the women's side are not players that are coming in sort of undefeated. You know what I mean? Then that's very rarely happening. It happens a little more on the men's side. You know, Medvedev going on like big charge like through the US Open series, or Zverev has done. They tend to get those back-to-back victories a lot more frequently, I find, than with the women, especially when the slams are involved.
Can I have Badosa as a dark horse? I think she qualifies as a dark horse, doesn't she?
Bencic.
Badosa.
Wait, who did you say?
Badosa.
Oh, Badosa.
Begins with a B.
Sorry. I was busy coughing. Badosa, she's a dark horse. It's not like she's ever been in a Grand Slam final. I think with the way that she's playing, for me, she's playing the best tennis going into Melbourne, going into Australian Open. The best tennis I've seen over the last couple of weeks. Look, I haven't seen every single match. I know Osaka played some great stuff. Krejcikova was playing brilliantly against Kontave. But for me, I think Badosa's playing the best level. Does that translate into her winning? I don't know, but she's one of the favourites for sure.
Do you have an answer as to why Sabalenka can't serve anymore?
Oh my, I mean, I don't...
It's incredible. It's incredible.
It was genuinely painful to watch. Like, it was really actually quite very uncomfortable. I really felt for her.
But is it nerves? Is she nursing an injury? Has she tried to change the action in the off-season? What could it be? Because it's been awful. And I imagine when it starts, then nerves do kick in and play a part of it. But for someone who has such a good, big, powerful serve, she's been serving underarm.
Yeah, it's not an injury. And those underarm serves don't seem particularly practiced, you know, because she's hitting like topspin underarm serves. She's basically just feeding the ball in, and like, you're just never going to win the point. You're just hitting a short ball and starting the point with that. I mean, no one wants to do that. You know, people who do the underarm serve will tend to cut on the inside, try and get the angle, try and keep it low, like a drop, more like a drop shot than just rolling it onto the service line. No, I don't think she's injured. I think anything could have caused this, really. It could be just a confidence and anxiety thing, but normally it started because of the technique on it. So either she was working on her serve in the off season and she's been working on the wrong things and has just lost that rhythm and momentum through the shot, because you can work technically on things and make changes and they might all be correct, but it's sort of like, if one thing goes out of line, it's such a chain reaction, the serve. There's so much sort of kinetic energy moving. It's an incredibly difficult and highly coordinated shot to pull off. It's why we see so many people struggle with it over more than any other shot. Technically, it's very complex. And if one thing just sort of shifts out of alignment too far, the knock-on effect is huge. And it can actually be really difficult to work out why. And we've seen that because it's been two matches in a row. It wasn't like it was a quick fix of, oh, you know, you messed it up there. I think she hit, was it 19 double faults in one match and then 21 in the following match? I mean, she managed to win the 19 double faults. So, I mean, yeah, something's been just sort of knocked out of alignment and it's not working. It's like gears, right? Like, you know, one's jammed and it's just not going to function. So she needs to work out what's happening, because there's no rhythm, and then you lose your confidence, then you get in your own head, then you get anxious, then she was crying on the court, then she's hitting underarm serves, then she's all over the place, and the pressure really mounts to sort it out.
So your winner and dark horse in the women, so I'm going to go Osaka to win. I know it's a tough section of the draw. She's got Barty in there, but she's looked so good. So has Barty. I mean, crikey, Barty's looked great. But I'm just going to go Osaka. I just think with that power hitting, and she's got a smile on her face. So I'm going to go Osaka and Badosa as my dark horse. There you go.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go Badosa as my winner.
Okay, nice. And who's your dark horse?
My dark horse will be Kontaveit, I think.
Oh,
also
nice.
Playing phenomenal tennis. Muguruza was playing really well until she had a bit of a shocker against Kazakhina in Sydney. But again, I sort of think that's good for her. She's better when she's going in sort of frustrated with her game. That's when she really thrives in slams. So I think she's probably more of a threat because she lost that match. I think it was 4-4. She lost to Kazakhina, who's playing much better, which is really brilliant to see. She's sort of getting back to her best. Whether she'll be able to get back to the top 10, I'm not sure. She's not a threat for the tournament, I don't think. Just watch out Muguruza. But yeah, I think Badosa's going to win it. And I think Kontaveit is going to have a great chance.
Before we get to the men's draw, a couple of stories. One that you drew my attention to because I think it came out while I was flying. And the other one I actually read while I was waiting at immigration, both involving tennis parents. I was reading the Bernard Tomic, and we know that John Tomic, we'd heard a lot that his father really ruled with an iron rod and was very strict, and it hadn't been that great an upbringing. And Bernard Tomic, who lost in qualifying, then was tested positive for COVID, has done an interview with an Australian newspaper talking about how difficult it was with his father and how it probably ruined his chances of fulfilling his potential, etc. Then you drew my attention to an absolute heartbreaker involving Juan Martín Del Potro.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're just starting to get sort of the information on that coming out now, his financial situation. Sort of waiting for proper confirmations on it, but yeah, really heartbreaking if it's true that ultimately he's pretty broke thanks to some of the actions of
his
dad.
So someone, I think I read a bit of it that said he's made over something like $30 million, and I mean, we say only with a, he's only got $3 million in the bank, but compared to what he should have had. And in this article they were saying, you know, he hoped to sort of retire and take care of himself and his family for the rest of his life for what he did have. The fact that he doesn't, I mean, it might explain, together with his love of tennis, while he keeps putting his body through these comebacks.
Well, it's a combination, isn't it? Because not only does he only have the small fraction of what he's earned because it's been spent by his father, who has since died, it seems that his dad was racking up massive debts. So, you know, that money isn't really just sort of in the bank, because not only does he not have a big chunk of his fortune, he's got a lot of debts to sort out now. So it seems like a very stressful and upsetting situation for Del Potro. So hopefully he can get back out on tour and earn some money. And because you never know, he could win a slam.
Oh, it's so sad when you hear those stories. And then it was an interesting interview that Bernard Tomic gave. I mean, a lot of it we've heard before, but they had some good quotes from Pat Rafter in there about his sort of on-off relationship with Tomic. I mean, look, Tomic's made so many comebacks now, we'll have to wait and see. But neither of those guys are part of the Australian Open draw. So in terms of your winner and your... can we have three names? Because Djokovic might or might not be playing.
because you're going to pick Djokovic. Are you going to pick Djokovic?
Oh, come on. If anyone can come through all this and then go and do it, of course he can. I wouldn't say it'd be his greatest ever achievement, but of course he can. So can I have three if I'm picking Djokovic?
Yes, go on then. Go on then.
So,
go on.
So my three. Oh, no, actually, one's got to be a dark horse, hasn't it? Okay,
yep.
So Djokovic to win. If he's not in it, I thought about Nadal, but actually Medvedev hasn't played that well at the start of the year. I'll go Nadal, you know. I'm going to go Nadal if Djokovic isn't in, or maybe if Djokovic is in, it'll still be Nadal. And my dark horse, I'm not sure about, actually. So let's tell me who's going to win for you, and I'll think about my dark horse. I've got to find a dark horse in the meantime.
So I think that Medvedev is going to win.
Ooh.
It's very difficult. I don't see Djokovic winning. I think that somebody...
Well, I don't see him playing it, to be fair.
Well, exactly. I mean, but if he were to play, I think that, you know, he's got like a Berrettini in that section, and I think it would be a real opportunity for somebody. So I mean, I'm sort of torn between Medvedev and Zverev. I know Nadal's won a tournament coming in. I'm just not convinced that he's ready for what's needed to win the tournament. I'm sure that he will thoroughly shut me up with the way that he plays. I'll land on Medvedev. As I say, I was sort of, I'm undecided between Medvedev and Zverev, but I'll tip it to Medvedev. And I think my dark horse, how many Grand Slams are you allowed to have as a dark horse?
I know who you're going to say, because I think I'm going to say the same person.
It's Andy Murray.
Andy Murray, exactly.
Come on, he's in the final of Sydney. He's drawn against Basil Ashvili, who he's already beaten. His seed, his tough seed, would be Sinner.
Because then it's
who you imagine Sinner's just going to look there, look on court and be like, oh my God, it's Andy Murray, and then not be able to play. I'm obviously joking.
I mean,
I'm
that
sure
chunk,
he'll be fine.
That chunk is nice. Basil Ashvili, Murray, Tara Daniel, Barry Osvera, Johnson, Thompson. Isn't that Johnson, Thompson, two separate people? Lucky loser and Shell Souza. And then, as you said, Yannick Sinner. I mean, that's a nice chunk of the draw to be in.
Yeah, I think Murray can come through that. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just, how am I saying this? How on earth am I saying this after what we saw a few years ago from Murray? I just thought there was no chance, no prospect of this whatsoever. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, he's my dark horse.
No, you're 100%. You can have a wild card as a dark horse. 100%.
Yeah, he may have won a few Grand Slams, but he's
but
a wild card.
Not with these hips, or with one of the hips he did. Not with the other.
Okay, so part of him has not won a Grand Slam. So there we go.
Exactly.
Okay.
There is part of him that was not present when he won his Grand Slams.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Fine.
So
it's sold.
A bodily part. So okay. So we both got Murray. You've gone bottom half the draw for your winner. I've gone top half. Women, you've gone Badosa. I've gone Badosa. Dark horse Osaka to win it, and your dark horse is Kontaveit. I think there's some quite good predictions. Look, you know what? I'm looking forward to...
Yeah, you say that. Wait until in 7 days' time, because this is what normally happens to my predictions.
When all our predictions are out, Djokovic is still going strong, or the immigration minister is still trying to deport him. He's still appealing.
Gosh.
We're like, people, we have to have a cutoff because this is ridiculous. But I'm really excited and lucky to be back in Melbourne, because I know there's still a lot of Australians who haven't been able to come home and haven't been home. So I'm really... I was looking out the taxi window trying to sort of, what do I remember? And I was thinking, well, it's pitch black, so nothing. I've got a couple of COVID tests to do tomorrow morning. I took a lateral flow when I got to my hotel room. I've got a couple to take tomorrow morning before I can go on site. Then I'll be allowed in. And looking forward to it. Just, it was tough leaving the family, because it is a long way to come, Australia, isn't it?
So yeah.
When you're sitting on the plane for 20 hours, you think, oh, it's a long
way
to come.
Yeah, but the sunshine waiting for you, and the chaos. You were supposed to have a lovely weekend over there, getting used to the time difference, maybe pop along, check out the commentary box.
Go for a run,
box.
Breakfast, exactly. Look at the commentary
have
box,
a nice
hello
time.
To people.
You're going
to
be on air all day tomorrow and Sunday. You're going to be full on with this absolute chaos.
I am outside Djokovic's immigration hotel, and I'm standing here, and the Serbian people are here, and yes,
like the,
I'll be
like
that person.
The Nigel Farage update. That was amazing.
I'm sorry
for our international listeners who don't know who Nigel Farage is.
You're lucky you don't know who Nigel Farage is.
I know,
if I'm honest.
And I don't really know how to describe him as a politician, but he never got elected for anything, so he's not a politician. He's sort of a politician.
Have a look. Search Andy Murray's recent tweet, yeah, and you'll see a little when he sort of hooked in Nigel Farage on Twitter. So have a look. But I'm fascinated
to know how this has come about. I don't.
How does he suddenly turn up at like the Djokovic Museum looking at trophies with his mum and dad? I mean, how does that even happen? That was one of, you know, those weird things you think, did that, how does that, okay, so that's happened.
I'm jumping around all over the place here. But
no,
but can
go,
we also
go,
say
yes.
that there's been reports, it's such a busy week. It was reported in the Daily Mail that Netflix are doing a documentary on the 2022 season, like The Drive to Survive Formula One. It's the same people who made that. And not only that, because you know, doing the Formula One one is different because Formula One run the whole thing and that's it. They're the only company you need to deal with. But in tennis, of course, we've got lots of different governing bodies. But they got on board the ATP, the WTA, the ITF and all four Grand Slams to say, yep, wow, absolutely, you can have the access. They are filming the whole year to do this documentary. And yeah, they had access to an awful lot of what's been going on with Novak Djokovic. So they must be like,
oh,
wow, it's
word.
Not, we're not even at the first slam of the year. And they've arguably had the biggest story that there's been for
they've
some
peaked.
Time. Unbelievable. It's... So you know what the first episode's going to be focusing on.
Well, this is, well, I've got to get my head around all this because I've just had 12 hours watching season 5 of Billions. So I'm ready to stage a takeover, yep, buy some shares. Ooh. And
ooh, well, join the Djokovic camp then. That's certainly what they need. They're like, excellent.
And fly around on helicopters and private jets. So I've been in a very unreal world for the last 12 hours or so. But no, I'm back in it now. Djokovic, as we speak, is currently here in his own hotel or apartment for tonight. The tennis is going to start. Andy Murray will face Aslan Karatsev in the final, who beat Dan Evans. That would have been the first all-British men's final in the Open era. But wow, we don't get it because that went the distance. And Karatsev, I mean, credit to Karatsev. I mean, he's just kept going.
Yeah.
He is not a one-hit wonder who hasn't won a slam. But that fella, the wheels never came off.
No,
the calves
and...
got bigger, the wheels never came off.
That is true. Him and Krejcikova sort of very similarly won, well, she won a slam, he obviously reached the semis, but achieved what they achieved. And everyone around was just like, this is amazing, what a run. And they were both just sort of looking at everyone being like, yeah, what? I mean, are you surprised? I'm not surprised. I thought this was going to happen. Do you know what I mean? They just sort of had the attitude of like, yeah, sure, I just... And then they just keep going. Like, yeah, sure, I just keep going. Like, Krejcikova was like,
yeah,
I'm a top 10 player now pretty comfortably, like, no, just bust it out week in, week out. Karatsev is like, yeah, I just won Dubai and whatever, you know, just keep going.
So you're going to be on weird hours now, aren't you? Are you upside down? You're upside down hours
just
now,
got the
you?
Just got the final tomorrow of Sydney to do before Australia starts. Yep. But Australia, okay. I'm be doing it for a European broadcast and we're doing it from London, so yeah, play will start at midnight.
Okay. And I'll be, well, on normal hours for me. Well, I don't know. This Djokovic thing, I don't know. Might be standing,
I know they might release something in the middle of the night over there. You can't predict it.
I might be standing outside a hotel for the next 3 days saying, he's in there. He has not looked out his window yet. Now I'm at the airport. Oh, but we'll keep everyone posted. It's so nice to be out. I'll catch up with a few people I haven't seen for a while, find out some bits and pieces. So, look, next time we speak on the pod, he will either have been there or not. At least we'll have a conclusion. I can't believe it's taken this long, but next time we do the pod, we'll have a conclusion. There will be a conclusion.
Will we, though?
There has to
will
be.
Will we?
There.
I think we said that last time.
There has to be. I don't even think there's another chance. There has to be. This is it. But no, I'm going to go to bed now because my computer's showing me the UK time. So I thought it was 1 o'clock in the morning, but it's, what is it? It's midnight or something like that. So, I've got to go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's necessary.
Yeah, definitely do that.
And I'll stop thinking about those hoovers again. I will do. I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.